Welcome to the podcast. Today we have
it's a date that will live in infamy.
We do. Jerry Boykin's on. Lieutenant General from I would say some. He has a pretty big history.
Yeah, he was original member of the Delta Force, a founding member of that. You know, he ran all of our special operations for a while. He has a different take than Joe Biden on Afghanistan. We also talked to somebody who has been in our wheelhouse for quite some time, an expert on the persecution of Christians in the Middle East. He tells us what's coming for those people that are remaining in the Middle East. You don't want to miss that. Then we take on Woke Incorporated. All this. And the identity of who the new leader is in Afghanistan.
Mm.
You're going to love this one. Blast from the past, all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
We welcome Pat Gray from Pat Gray Unleashed into our studios with us now.
Thank you.
Boy, I was proud of our president yesterday.
Oh, bursting.
He
bursting
was,
with pride.
Yeah, the buck stops here. Well, except for the, you know, the part that...
except for the part where he blamed Trump.
Yeah, and the part that he...
and the Afghans.
Afghani people. You
know, well, as he said, the buck stops here except for wherever
else. Except for
else.
Trump and the
yeah,
Afghans.
Yeah, the buck stops.
Whose fault it really is.
I mean, it's really their fault.
It's really their fault.
It's not my
but
fault.
But the buck stops directly
right.
here.
Right, and it was important to know that. That he made the decision, but he was forced into the decision.
By Trump.
Because by Trump.
This is the one thing that's been
consistent.
Well,
he followed the Trump plan like he's done so many other times.
Every time.
Man, if he's followed one Trump plan, he's followed them all, hasn't he?
He so refuses to change it up at all from the direction that Trump was going.
And it was too good.
That's why that was a good excuse.
Yeah.
Because of his consistency on all the other Trump-related matters.
Yeah. Like the border, for instance.
Just you know, straight ahead.
Yeah, straight ahead.
Well, I think he is.
Keep it going.
I mean, the nice thing is the way he is so consistent. The way the border is going is exactly the way Afghanistan is going.
Yes, you mean worse than ever before?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What about
yes.
inflation, though? That's not going
yes,
the same way, is it?
It is actually
Spending in the same
way? We're thinking that maybe $13 trillion to $21 trillion by the end of his term.
I love how he's blaming Trump for that, too. Oh, that $8 trillion he spent was ridiculous. Yeah. You've spent that in about... an hour.
And all Democrats agreed with that spending, we should point out as well.
Trump, I believe, was making them smaller, wasn't he? At one point, wasn't he like...
Some of it, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, George W. Bush spoke out yesterday. He said, Laura and I have been watching the tragic events unfolding in Afghanistan with deep sadness. Our hearts are heavy for both the Afghan people who have suffered so much and for the Americans and NATO allies who have also sacrificed so much. Mm-hmm. The Afghans now are at the greatest risk, as are the same ones who have been on the forefront of progress inside their nation. President Biden has promised to evacuate these Afghans along with American citizens and our allies. The United States government has legal authority to cut the red tape for refugees during urgent humanitarian crisis. And this is what I like. You know, we could have done that slowly and methodically, but now let's just cut the red tape, and no need to really go slowly on who comes here in America and who doesn't. You know, I'm sure all those who are applying only have the best of intentions and really belong here, which is...
yeah, you won't get anybody from the Taliban or Al-Qaeda.
No.
Not a single person.
No. I mean, there's not going to be anybody. I mean, I just hope we can get more Ilhan Omars, you know?
Right.
Which we brought into this country, and she has just... she loves it.
She
loves
shines it. Here.
Hey, by the way, did you hear about the DNA test?
I did see this story, yes.
Yeah, so there was a DNA test.
I didn't hear about the DNA test.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Endeavor DNA Laboratories did a test. They took a They took, I think, a straw from one of them.
And a cigarette.
And a cigarette butt from the other. Okay.
Meaning
and
Ilhan Omar and her alleged
brother slash husband.
I mean, her husband.
Her husband brother.
Yeah.
Her brother husband.
A brother. A brother.
Yeah, brother husband. Mm-hmm. Now, here's
Did
the thing.
Did they find out it is her brother?
Well, only 99.999998% chance.
Oh, so you're saying there's a chance?
I'm saying that there's a chance that they're not. But hopefully we can get that kind of screening done.
It's a bit of a weird story. They claim to have legitimately, like, she's smoking, and they just took the cigarette butt and then tested the DNA over a multiple year investigation. It's a very it's a very strange story, but that is what who reported that? Was it the Daily Mail? I can't remember who reported
it. Daily Mail.
Yeah, so yeah. I don't know. I don't.
Wow.
I haven't heard anyone else reporting it yet.
I haven't either.
It's a very odd story.
Well,
odd but interesting.
But the whole saga is very odd. The whole saga is odd, even without DNA evidence.
Yeah, let's not talk about it because there's nothing to see there. Let's just get as many people from Afghanistan onto flights here in America.
Look, it's a tough line because the people that did help us do deserve to get out of there.
Yeah, they
wouldn't
do.
Have been a tough line. It wouldn't have been a tough line.
Had you done it differently.
Yeah, you say, we're going to pull out everybody who is concerned about dying.
Mm-hmm.
Come to the embassy right now and we'll get all this paperwork done. You should have done that first.
And they've been doing that. They've just blown the process the entire time, which is not a surprise. Yeah. They've had plenty of time. I mean, as everyone has noted here, Donald Trump negotiated this deal. And Mike Pompeo negotiated this deal. And the exit was supposed to be May 1st. So we actually had more time than was actually outlined in the deal. And still it went this way, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. You had multiple extra months to prepare for this and still screwed it up like this.
Mm-hmm.
Massively pathetic.
Well, you know, the thing that I really like is the fact that now the entire world, every single one of our allies now saying
they know they can trust us.
Good God.
Yeah, they're
coming out now.
They know
out
we're there
loud.
For you. I know they are.
And saying we don't know if we can trust that America will ever have our back.
Well, yeah.
That's England and Denmark and Germany and France. Our allies are saying,
well, some of those countries punch above their weight anyway.
Yeah, well, they do.
They don't need us.
They do. They do.
They don't need us.
Yeah, they do.
Well, what would you say? If I'm Taiwan, I am
don't worry.
Terrified.
Yeah, don't worry.
Terrified.
China just said when we march into Taiwan,
don't expect the Americans to come.
The
help.
Americans won't help.
And they're right.
Exactly right.
They're right. What do you say about that? Well, okay. Yeah. You're right.
Clearly. I mean, any move, China obviously is aware of this. I'm not breaking news to them, but any move they'd want to make right now, they could just get away.
Well, they already
with.
Did with Hong Kong.
Yeah, they did it with Hong Kong. We didn't do anything.
Yeah, did nothing.
They could do it with Taiwan. They could do it wherever they wanted. Did you guys know that?
And they know it.
And they won the Olympics. Did you guys see that?
I saw that.
I see they tried to win the Olympics by adding Taiwan.
Yeah, they just added all the countries
Hong
they
Kong.
Want to control.
And Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And they still didn't beat us with Taiwan and Hong Kong.
They tried.
And not in
they
total
tried.
Medals
it was
anyway.
Very. It was very close. It was very, very close.
It was
close.
Very close.
And
we added Canada because they're just like us anyway. Yeah. You can't tell
Mexico.
Canadians apart from
and China.
Americans.
And China. We also added China.
And we'd still be at what? Not even half their population?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Think of that. You
they're
say,
five times our population.
America isn't
them.
Exceptional. America isn't exceptional. They have five times the population.
And don't forget the sport camps. Where they take children from their families when they're two.
Correct. And they take the children that are destined for greatness and they never see their families again.
Mm-hmm.
And they're taken to these camps and they're trained their whole life
to beat
us. This is what you're going to do. And they can't find a way to beat us.
It's pretty amazing.
I know this system doesn't work, does it? That old freedom thing, I don't know, it's kind of messy.
Yeah, we're exceptional. You know, a lot like Great Britain is exceptional. And
Japan is exceptional. Russia is exceptional.
Zimbabwe is exceptional.
There's nothing exceptional about us because everyone thinks they're exceptional. Right. Exceptional.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Uh-huh.
Should anyone be talking about the 25th Amendment?
Should anyone be talking about that?
You mean should everyone
be
talking
about
it?
You mean for Donald Trump? Yes!
Yeah.
When he gets back in August, mm-hmm. we need to remove him immediately with the 25th Amendment.
We only have 14 days left, so we better get that done pretty soon.
I mean, I find this incredible that no one is talking about that.
Well, I don't, you know, honestly, watching him yesterday.
Yesterday, he looked solid.
He looked solid, and mm-hmm. honestly,
because he hasn't worked in 2 weeks.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. But I would say he seemed completely completely confident in his huge mistake. Like he absolutely mm-hmm. seemed to. I did this intentionally.
Yeah,
sort of laid it out.
And I stand behind it.
Yeah, I think he.
Okay.
I because on Sunday I felt the same way. Where is this guy? Do we have a president or not? But he was there. He was just making this decision intentionally, and it went the way that he was talking about.
No, not on the weekend. Not on the weekend. He wasn't. He wasn't. He was actually calling the Fort Worth School District. To congratulate them on
this
their very
that's a true thing
true story
actually
on a
did
very brave stand on masks to stand against the governor of Texas. He was making calls to support the teachers union while people were falling out of the sky and being slaughtered in the streets of Afghanistan. I mean, just in case you needed it to be worse,
right.
There it is. There's your president.
I'll say this. Coming into this, none of us believed Joe Biden was going to be a good president. But this has been
spectacularly worse than I thought it was.
This is, you know what? This is the exact opposite of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. I expected Donald Trump to be somewhat of a disaster.
Back in 2016.
Yeah. He gets into office and he was a disaster on, you know, relationships and everything else. But it all kind of turned out the right way. You know, I think that they're all treasonous in the press. And you're like, oh, dear God, why would you say that? And then like 2 years later and you're like, you know what? I think he's
treasonous
right.
in the press.
I think he's right.
Look at apples to apples here. Basically, he came in with one of the biggest people forget this. One of the biggest things in the entire campaign was ISIS. In 2016.
Wiped him out.
And he wiped him out. A very similar situation here where you have an mm-hmm. insurgent group starting here. And we're just like giving them the country. We're just like, you guys take it. You'll probably do better than we could anyway. That's basically his. I mean, think about how bad this has been. This has been, we all assumed. This is almost, it's very similar to the Taliban. Like, we all kind of assumed that maybe the Taliban would be back in control eventually. But it happened so fast. It was like breathtaking. That's the Biden administration. Like, I didn't assume he was going to be a good president. But this is breathtaking how bad he has been, how quickly he's gotten to this level of complete failure. I mean, this has been, it's remarkable.
No, he did this. Why would you expect less in Afghanistan when this is exactly how breathtaking the border was?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it didn't, it wasn't a big buildup. It was just like, you know what? Come on in.
Yeah.
And everybody came in.
They had a chart they've been running for years on the border that the government releases. And you've
this
seen
is amazing.
Before.
Have you seen this?
I don't know.
You've probably seen this chart a million times where they show like how many migrants are coming in and like the lines kind of follow each other pretty much every year. And there's a spike every once in a while. And then you've seen the chart where they goes up and it goes way above the all the previous years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the peak of that chart was 200,000. They've now had to adjust the chart because it literally went off the chart. Yeah. It went off the chart. They had to change the chart they've been releasing. Yeah, it was 210 or 220. So now they're now north of the top of the actual chart. That's how bad he's been. He's been legitimately, literally off the charts bad.
Congratulations.
Yay!
Congratulations.
Yay!
But it's a very diverse group of people.
Yes, it is. That's true. That's important.
Right. You know, and some of the men in the administration are having babies, and mm-hmm. I just think it's something to be proud of. It really is.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
There is a guy who's been on the program before. He is somebody who's just, I mean, a giant mentally. First of all, he won in 93, won the bodybuilding championship as a teenager. And you're like, okay, he's a muscle head. Then he went on to receive his BA and his MA in history. Dual minors in philosophy and literature. He also studied closely with Victor Davis Hanson, graduate courses at Georgetown University. He also studied medieval Islam and Semitic languages at Catholic University of America, serves as the Arabic language and regional specialist at the Near East section of the Library of Congress, where he informs a lot of people that are in the know and government officials. He also often functions as a journalist, has been a media fellow at the Hoover Institution, news analyst for CBN News and others. He produces a monthly report, Muslim Persecution of Christians, which is why I wanted to bring him on now. He is chronicling day to day the abuses and slaughters of Christians throughout the Islamic world, and no one is really paying attention to what is going on. I wanted to bring him on. It's Raymond Ibrahim. He is the author of Sword and Scimitar and a distinguished senior fellow at Gatestone Institute. Raymond, welcome.
Hi, Glenn. Very good to be with you again.
Yeah, good to talk to you again. I'm concerned with what's going on in Afghanistan. You know, I don't know if you're aware, but I started the Nazarene Fund a few years ago with ISIS, and we have been going in and trying to free the women and children that have been made slaves, and anyone that is persecuted because they're a minority, a religious minority. We've been trying to get them out, and now I think we've got a whole new country to look at. Can you tell me what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. Afghanistan, even before what happened recently, is widely considered the absolute worst Muslim nation in the world insofar as its treatment of minorities, specifically Christian minorities. So if you look at Open Doors, International Human Rights Organization, they publish their World Watch list annually of the top 50 worst nations. Habitually, of course, it's dominated by Muslim nations for obvious reasons, but the top 10 nations are the absolute worst, and two or three of them are not Islamic, and usually the first worst nation in the world is North Korea. But then the second worst nation and the first Muslim nation is Afghanistan. And so you can imagine with what's happening right now, it's going to get significantly worse for any sort of believer in that area. In fact, here's a little quote from the World Watch list about Afghanistan. It says, quote, "It is impossible to live openly as a Christian in Afghanistan. Leaving Islam is considered shameful. Christian converts face dire consequences if their new faith is discovered. Either they have to flee the country or they will be killed." And that's and now with this new resurgent, emboldened Islamist mentality, you can be sure that it's going to get significantly worse for any Christian living in that nation or even nearby.
Raymond, can you help us out on the one question that is kind of a nagging question, and I don't understand it at all? And that is, why did the Afghani people not put up any kind of fight? What happened there?
Well, I would say that there's what we are told, and this actually, what I'm saying right now, actually comports very well with so many other things that we talk about in the West and America and so forth. But there's what the media tells us, there's what the analysts and the experts tell us, and then there's the reality. And the people on the ground in Afghanistan and in these countries, they don't really care for the Western for the things that the West cherishes, okay? The things that we say are you know, the cornerstone of Western culture, let's say gender equality, for one example, or eliminating the patriarchy. These are things that have existed not just in Afghanistan and not just because of Islam. I would say Islam actually reinforces so many of these primordial tendencies of, let's say, patriarchalism and so forth. Not creates it. It actually just it reinforces it. So they go way back, these ideas, in places like Afghanistan. And when you just go there, and as the U.S. government actually did, especially increasingly in more recent years, try to import, I don't know to what degree, but it sounds like to a large degree they were trying to import woke culture as well. None of that's going to fly with any Afghani at all, because they're just not part of that culture. And they might have, you know, to an extent, in as much as the America was in there and they were trying to work with it, they played along. But once it became imminent that the U.S. is leaving and so forth, all, you know, the charade just came off, the mask came off, and it was right back to the way it was. And unfortunately, and that's the idea, you know, this whole nation building and trying to import democracy to cultures that simply, you know, have, it doesn't resonate with at all for a myriad reasons. That's why it fails. And after two decades and all the money and blood and treasure that's been spent, that's why we are where we are.
So, because I heard Tucker Carlson last night talk about how, you know, we were teaching all these woke principles. You know, these are principles that don't sit well with half the population over here. Has this made them turn to an Islamist even harder? Or is it just like, I don't care, just not these guys anymore?
I would argue the former. Historically, wherever the West in any way, shape or form retreats or is perceived to be weak, it has actually immensely exacerbated the idea of radical Islam. So if you go back to, let's say, the colonial era in the, you know, 19th century, mid 19th century and early 20th century, where today we would describe America, or not America's actions, mostly Europe's European action in the Middle East and the Islamic world, as very negative. It was toxic masculinity. It was not multicultural. It was, you know, our way or the highway. That's how Europeans more or less came about. That actually, believe it or not, and, you know, putting aside all judgments, worked. And Muslims didn't feel resentful. They didn't. They actually tried to catch up, and they saw it as the winning way. And we have to be part of that culture. And that's why you saw the hijab go away. It's ironic today, you know, 21st century, you see the hijab and the burqas and all and that. But when you go back to the 1800s and you look at pictures of women in the Middle East and Egypt, Afghanistan and Syria and these countries, they actually look like Western women. So they were actually trying to emulate. But in as much as the West starts to retreat, start to say our ways are bad, our history is awful, your way, Islam, is wonderful. And that actually isn't seen as, oh, you're being polite, let me try to reciprocate. It's actually seen as admission of weakness, and it emboldens and it makes Muslims go back to their own way. And that's why you see today in the 21st century a large segment of the Muslim population trying to emulate the 7th century Muslims, the pure jihadists of Muhammad's time. And so, yeah, there's definitely a symbiotic relationship with Western weakness and Islamic aggression. And I think with what happened in Afghanistan, you're going to see that again.
So I read the story this morning about a woman who is a mayor of a small town, and the Taliban has come in, and she said, I'm just waiting for them to come and take me and kill me. And she said, there's no place for me to go. And so I'm just waiting. The Taliban has said, oh, no, no, no. We're not like that anymore. Does any sane person believe that to be true?
No, but the problem is we're lacking in sanity to a large extent, especially when it comes to, you know, our leaders and our betters. For whatever reason, they just don't want to think according to sane principles. And it's even worse than that. Reports came out around August 11th, a week ago, of the Taliban going door to door and forcibly taking girls as young as 12 to be their sex slaves, to be their wives. And again, so you see, it's all back. It's just amazing, you know, 20 years of that and this most powerful nation and all the money that's spent and all the blood and all that. And then we are not just back to where we were, I would argue, to an even worse spot. And it all has to do with a very myopic Western worldview, which is, okay, look, we killed the bad guys. We got rid of the bad guys. Let's say Osama bin Laden and remember Mullah Omar. And now we've set up a government, and obviously they're all going to want to be like us because this is the natural culmination. And see, I think this is what they don't understand. In order to reach a good sort of Western democracy and the principles that we have, you have to have a bedrock before that. You can't just import it on, you know, a surface of Islam or tribalism. And our bedrock would be, I would argue, something like Judeo-Christian principles. And that's why you can build what we essentially built. And but because they don't see that, and they actually, and when you say that, oh my God, that's the worst thing, Judeo-Christian principles, oh, that's, you're being, you know, whatever, triumphalist, and so forth. And so without that, you see what's happening. They bring the package without the found the groundwork being laid, and the end result is what we see and what we always keep seeing.
We're talking to Raymond Ibrahim, who is an expert on the Middle East. What is coming our way, do you think, because of this collapse?
Oh, I would argue, well, it's funny because I remember almost 20 years ago, you know, Ayman Zawahiri, who was the second at the time of Al-Qaeda, and he's currently the head of Al-Qaeda since Osama bin Laden died. But I remember when Osama bin Laden, ever about 3 years after the invasion of Afghanistan, some reporters, CNN, asked him, Ayman Zawahiri, what's, you know, what happened? Where's Osama bin Laden? Where's Mullah Omar? We don't hear about him. And what he said is, it was very telling. I'll give you the quote. He said to them, "Jihad in the path of Allah is greater than any individual organization. It's a struggle between truth and falsehood until Allah Almighty inherits the earth." And then he said, "Mullah Omar and Sheikh Osama bin Laden are merely two soldiers of Islam in the journey of jihad, but the struggle continues for all time." And so you see there's that patience where it looked like they lost, they stepped back. Now, well, look, they're winning, even though those two guys are not there, Mullah Omar and Sheikh Osama bin Laden. And Ayman Zawahiri will come and go. Muhammad himself, the prophet, came and died, but the jihad goes on. So, and they're already saying this. Just recently, a leader said, "It's our belief that one day the Mujahideen will have victory and Islamic law will come not just to Afghanistan." He just said this a couple days ago. "But all over the world. We are not in a hurry. We believe it will come day. Jihad will not end until the last day." So you see, it's this patience mentality that we're dealing with, while we usually just, you know, sit and look at these little myopic sort of milestones that in the end just don't amount to much.
Raymond, any suggestion on where we should go from here? And I mean, as a people, not as a government. You know, this audience is very involved in rescuing people in the Middle East and all over the world, that especially women and children that are found in these situations. And we want to help all persecuted minorities get to safety. Any suggestion on what we should be looking towards or how we can help?
Well, the first thing, of course, is to have to be armed with adequate knowledge. And I know you are, and I'm assuming most of your audiences, but to understand that, you know, we're talking about something like Christian persecution or religious persecution of minorities in general. When you come to understand that, it is overwhelmingly the lion's share of that phenomenon is being dealt out at the hands of Muslims. And the fact that it happens in sub-Saharan Muslim Africans, Nigeria, where you have a genocide of Christians. It happens, of course, in East Asia, Pakistan, even though in Malaysia, Indonesia, and of course, the heart of the Muslim world all throughout North Africa, Middle East, Turkey, Iran. When you understand that, I think you start to realize there's an ideology behind this, and it's important to get, you know, our heads wrapped around that ideology and understand it's not going anywhere anytime soon. It's been around for 14 centuries. You don't have to say every Muslim believes this or every Muslim is out to do this to understand that you do have this core in there doing that, and it needs to be eventually excised in order to put an end to what's happening.
People need to understand the difference between a Muslim and an Islamicist. That is the real problem, and we refuse to name it. Raymond Ibrahim, thank you so much. We'll talk again, my friend. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mike.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
I became aware of a video early, I think, last week from Politizoid. Politizoid has done several videos that are well worth your time to watch. Let me just play the highlights of this one. It starts in Disneyland, and it's a woke world.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to It's a Woke World.
This video takes you into It's a Small World, except everything has changed inside, but it looks exactly like it. It's a world of privilege in boats that are cramped. Welcome to Disney's re-education camp. If your skin is white, it's time you're contrite. It's a woke world after all. It's a world of power, a world of fears, and we work long days to make souvenirs. Although millions have died, and the Uyghurs aside, it's a woke world after all. There is a land where once you lived free as a capitalist pig of the bourgeoisie. We could eat until we are fat and we would vote Democrat if we just get past that wall. The guy who put this together would like to remain anonymous, so we're just going to refer to him as the creative director of Politizoid. He is a former Disney artist. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Glenn.
You bet. How are you?
I'm doing well. I liked your narration there.
Thank you. So you must have a great job, especially since you don't have to take credit in the bows. You also don't have to take the hits.
Well, my family's not quite ready for that yet. I think the day will come. But considering I live in Los Angeles and I run my own shop, so, you know, I have clients that couldn't really handle the fact that I animated that piece that you shared. But, you know, I'm tired of watching my country go down the drain, and it's time to do something. I've been doing these cartoons for about 10 years, and you know, at times we've had funding and a team of 12 guys running around. Other times it's just me. It depends on what the opportunity, the opportunity is there. But I took about a 7-year hiatus off of doing these cartoons and jumped back in the game with a piece called Shift Hits the Fan, because I was getting so bent out of shape over the impeachment scam. And kept seeing Adam Schiff coming on, you know, saying all these things that were undoubtedly, you know, false. And every one of them proved that he was lying. And so I dressed him up like Wile E. Coyote and I put some, you know, Trump hair on the Roadrunner and had him chasing after him. And about 3 weeks later, the White House was sharing it. And so, you know, it was like, well, I guess I'm back. So since then, I've been putting out as many as I can in between client jobs, and because these take quite a while to do. I mean, the piece you just played took about 4 to 5 weeks to complete. So
wow, full time.
So that, you know, yeah, it's a heavy investment in time to do something like this.
And are you doing it by yourself, or are there others involved in it?
Right now, the animation was done by myself. I had some friends that helped contribute some elements, some of the posters at the end, and, you know, like the pictures of Mao and that sort of thing. I had some help. And then I had some friends that brought together the chorus, because all that music was recreated.
Yeah.
None of that was pulled from any original Disney material.
Right.
So the orchestra, everything had to be recreated using synthesizers, and but I can't sing like a child.
So,
so fortunately, I had a friend that was able to bring together you know, a lot of acting students, and of course the end was an adult choir. So I'm not even sure how many people ended up singing it, because I wasn't there. They sent me the files, but without their help, I couldn't have pulled this off. I mean, if that song's not right, I mean, you want to feel like you're in a real attraction.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, the animation is unbelievable. I mean, you worked for Disney at one point as an animator, and it is, I mean, this is really, really well done. Why did you take on Disney?
Well, I wouldn't do what I do without Walt Disney. I grew up not wanting to be an animator. I grew up wanting to be Walt Disney. You know, I know his history. I've actually traveled to Marceline, Missouri twice and stood in front of his old offices in Kansas City, and of course done the tour here in LA multiple times of just tracing his steps, because I can't imagine what our country would be like without.
Amen. I am so glad to hear you say, I've been allowed to go into the archives. I've gone through his daily calendars and his diaries.
Yep.
He's an amazing man. And I don't know if you could say this about very many people, especially in the 20th century. Imagine America without Walt Disney. It would be a radically different place. And I'm not sure we'd still be free, because he put so much Americana into us, buried it deep into us as kids.
Well, yes. I mean, just imagine what Hollywood would be like without him. You know, there would have been no counterbalance. It's what we got now. You know, I don't know how deliberate or structured the takeover was, or if it was just kind of like an opportunity that presented itself to the left, but they took care of it by overtaking Walt's company. I understand why Walt took the company public, because he wanted to execute his ideas, but it was the worst mistake he ever made. Followed up only by him not really having a good succession plan when he died. He didn't. I mean, you know, he probably felt like he was immortal, or so. You know, I'm not going to die. But that happened much sooner than he anticipated, and you know, I learned what America was through watching those shorts, you know, Pecos Bill and Paul Bunyan and all those sorts of pieces. Yep. It just gave you a sense of pride and a connection to the people that came before us. And that connection has been severed. And I know that Walt would be just, I mean, that's why I put Walt at the end. I know you didn't get to that part, but I actually pulled from his congressional testimony, where he was talking about the communists in Hollywood. I turned that in on itself, where he is actually calling the current regime of Disney communist as a floating head in the reanimation lab, because the old urban legend that he was frozen.
Right.
Even though he was actually cremated.
Well, that's what they want you to believe. He's actually in the middle of the African, what is that stupid ride called? The African the jungle ride. That's where he is. The freeways. Yeah. The freezer's in the middle of the jungle cruise. Are there more people like you than we think? Because while we don't think there is anybody like you, are there more Disney people that are in that company that are just silent right now?
There are a lot of traditional folks that are below the line in Hollywood, meaning that, you know, they're the craftspeople, the ones that actually do the work, as opposed to the ones that are green lighting projects and actors commanding large salaries. And they keep their head down. You know, I have a buddy that is having to, you know, direct woke stuff right now. And you know, I get texts going, man, this is just, it's not my scene. I hate this. And, you know, they'll share my videos around by email, you know, their personal email, and give me the thumbs up. But, you know, what really needs to happen is an opportunity to start pulling those folks into a new operation that competes with Hollywood.
Yes.
One where they know that they're not going to be canceled, and that they can feed their families and save their country at the same time. And if an opportunity like that, you know, presents itself, then I think that there are tons of people in Hollywood that would jump at the chance.
I will tell you, though, the conservatives just don't part with their money as easily as liberals do, especially on things like movies. You know, they don't like the odds of success. And it's interesting, because when it comes to politics, it seems like the left never runs out of money. But it's very difficult on the right for some reason.
Well, there's a very different mindset. I mean, you know, I kind of straddle the world between entertainment and politics. And there's very, you know, the people that run the money in politics are very set in their ways. And they're able to kind of give the same sales pitch as to where the money's going to go and the ads. And, you know, I actually created 10 spots for the Trump campaign, and not one of them got used. And it wasn't the folks that I was working with directly. They were great. But it would go up the food chain, and it would get nixed.
Wow. Would you be willing to share them? I'd love to see them.
I actually rebranded them as Politizoid, and they're on the YouTube channel and the Twitter.
All right.
The ones that still made sense to release, but I mean, I didn't sleep all last October, and I put out spots that could have come up like the day after a debate or something, and they just didn't get used.
Wow.
And it was very frustrating because I feel like the pieces I did could have moved the needle. It could have brought in folks that a traditional campaign ad would not have reached. But you know, it's going to take time. And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time, but you know, I'm going to keep hammering at it, and as the opportunities present themselves, then I'm just going to, you know, kind of keep building.
Well, I Politizoid, I have to tell you, I was really, really impressed with this video, and I will begin to share some of your work as well, and hope to talk to you offline as well. I think what you're doing is exactly right, and I really appreciate your passion and your willingness to risk. Thank you.
Thank you. God
bless.
Appreciate it.
You bet. Bye-bye.